All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. So this is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 31st day of October. Lucas, are you still there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, what is your website, please?
It's rabbithole2.com. That's rabbithole with the number 2.com.
World Wide Web, rabbithole2.com. And the name of your DVD for sale there is titled what?
The Destroyer Star and the Future of Mankind.
And what do people need to pay for that?
It is $29 plus $3 shipping, basically, so it's
okay.
$32.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've got a copy here. I've watched it, and it is worth every penny. It may be the best $32 you've ever spent. Lucas's work is very complimentary to mine. His information, my information, fit hand in glove. And that's why we're going to make Lucas a frequent guest here. And when he gets his new DVD ready, which may be several months out, I guess we're probably looking after the first year now. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I'd say probably after the first.
Okay, because you got some projects you have to, you know, transportation is pretty important, moving your stuff is pretty important, and doing editing is a very time consuming thing, isn't it?
Oh goodness, it's a first. I mean, yeah. Just to say, yeah, there's a lot of time consumed into editing because you got to keep going back and looking at it and going through. You know, usually most of these people have people working for them. I'm just a one man band here. I do all the video editing, the audio, everything. So,
well,
all the web design and everything.
That's a skill I don't have. I don't have the skills or the equipment, so I have to have people do it for me. We got a call on hold here. Mike from Colorado. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes. Hey, John. How you doing?
Good.
Well, first of all, I just want to thank you for all of the information that you and Bill and Ann is giving all the listeners out there. It's definitely been life-changing and well worth it. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
My question is, with home safes, specifically for guns and valuables.
Hold that thought, Mike. Hold that thought. We got a break coming up. We'll be back after the break. Stay tuned.
All right.
Mike from Colorado, you still there, sir?
I am.
Oh, you were starting to ask a question about home gun safes, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. The specific question is the locking systems. If there is an EMP that occurs, should the standard dial be better than the keypad, which is operated with a battery?
Well, that's a good point. And to be on the safe side, you're probably better off with a simple mechanical dial. You're right. With safes, the more money you spend, the more security you get. But a simple mechanical device obviously would not be affected by EMP. Now, it's unknown to me how much or if EMP would affect a safe at all. And a well-made safe could really be very tough to get into.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, man. That's a good point, Mike. And if you're buying a safe, that might be something to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's. I just wanted your input on that because I'm in the market for one, and I tell you, just thinking about an EMP, if it occurs, it's like, wow, if I need my guns and I can't get at them and the rest of my valuables, I'm SOL,
Yeah, that would not be good. To be on the safe side, just go ahead and get a simple mechanical safe that has no electronics in it.
And just try not to be in too much of a hurry to get in, right?
Well, you should always have one gun out anyway, ready for use.
Absolutely.
So,
Thank you very much, John.
You're welcome. Lucas, you're still there, I assume.
Yes, sir.
Okay. You've been... give me some updates on these UFOs. There have been people seeing them, taking telephone videos of them. Tell us what's going on with the UFOs.
Oh, there's been all kind of wacky things. A few days ago in Pennsylvania, dozens and dozens of UFOs were in the sky, witnessed by lots of people. In fact, everybody alongside the highway was pulling over, taking pictures with their cameras or cell phones and things like that. And one of the more remarkable videos that I saw was this was supposedly taken off a ship down off the coast of Brazil. You've got about 11 UFOs lined up vertically in a straight line, right? And then all of a sudden you see an object come in from the atmosphere, from space, like a meteor or something like that. And it's coming in, and it goes right past one of the UFOs. And the UFO that's the closest to it takes off after the fireball, all right, and gets right behind it. Next thing you know, the fireball starts to get all wavy and wobbly, and then it breaks apart into millions of little pieces. And I never saw anything like that in my life.
It sounds like something from a science fiction movie, doesn't it?
It sounds exactly like something from a science fiction movie. And, you know, the people that were filming it, I think it's real because the response of the people, you know, in the background talking, it definitely looked and sounded very real. And
Right.
That's a very unique thing.
The topic of UFOs is something I typically don't get into publicly very much. It's a difficult one. There's so many. Well, there's the possibilities for UFOs are man-made technology from right now, typically military technology. Obviously, the possibility of alien spacecraft from another planet. And there's also the possibility of people involved in time travel, which, according to some scientists, that's certainly a possibility also, people from our future or people from our past.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely something to the, I mean, they've been, the whole reptile thing, you know, at first, years ago, I looked at it and was like, oh, I don't want to touch on that subject because, you know, you can't really prove anything. But then when you start looking more and more into it, and even as, when you look at something as simple as, I'm sure you remember the episode of Star Trek, the old Star Trek, with the Gorn episode where Kirk has to fight the Gorn. On the surface of the planet,
Go ahead.
Think about this. You got the Enterprise. All of a sudden, it runs into a godlike creature. Okay, where that man, the creature, whoever it was omnipotent or, you know, it had vast powers. And what it did is it basically pitted the human against the reptile, the Gorn, on the face of the. It's like the scene out of the Bible. I mean, they call the devil the serpent.
Right.
You know, it's like. They've been telling us about this kind of thing for a long time, just real subtly in the TV shows and movies and all that.
Right. I don't think I saw a particular episode. I never was a big Trekkie. But it is a fascinating topic. We got another call here. Mike from Minnesota. Go ahead, Mike.
I think Mike dropped the phone.
It sounds like it. Mike from Minnesota, are you there, sir? Well, it sounds like, we'll put Mike back on hold. Maybe he's busy getting a cup of coffee or something. This whole UFO thing, how does it play into what we're concerned about here with the Earth changes and so forth, Lucas?
Well, I think either they're here, I mean, I think they've actually been here for a long time. There's petroglyphs, you know, cave drawings of these creatures or whatever they are. Two different specific types, horned ones, and then obviously what we see, those little gray ones in the media all the time. But there's a very interesting petroglyph, a cave drawing, of a horned alien throwing snakes at one of the gray aliens. Okay, which is very interesting when you think about that. It was carved thousands of years ago.
Right.
And
right.
So that, to me, kind of cements, you know, that there is something behind it, that it's not all just made up and, you know, people seeing things that are, you know, U.S. aircraft or whatnot. But
we talked about this before. The people 3,000-plus years ago had a lot on their mind in terms of getting enough potable water to drink, enough food to consume, and so forth, keeping warm, keeping dry. Taking a sharp, hard rock and carving an image on a little bit softer rock was a time-consuming endeavor that these people really didn't have a whole lot of excess time or discretionary time on their hands, did they?
No, they were busy trying to survive.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting. I just saw day before yesterday, the History Channel basically, in their own little subtle way, kind of stole my presentation in a new episode of Ancient Aliens. It basically talks all about this stuff. But they never talk about an event. They just talk about how mankind lost this knowledge, how we were technically advanced thousands of years ago.
Really?
That we've lost the knowledge somehow, but they never really go into how. They don't talk about anything about that.
Yeah.
They just talk about what we did have. There's some amazing things. There's a line that goes straight through Europe. I forget the name of it. I've been trying to look it up for the last day. But basically, every city on this perfect straight line is named Star in its perspective language of whatever country it's in.
No kidding.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it's a straight line that goes all the way across Europe and I think into Asia. That every city on it is named Star.
I learned that
from the History Channel the other day, which I didn't know before. And watching this Ancient Aliens episode was kind of mind-boggling because I mean, you think that they have a 12,000 ton stone that they moved back in a day, but we can't move that today. We don't have enough equipment to be able to move that today.
You're talking about the one in Lebanon?
Yes.
Right. In fact, the Romans built a temple on top of the stone, but they didn't move it.
I mean, they had some sort of vibration technology that vibrated with the resonance of things and was able to.
Well, that reminds me of the Coral Castle down in Florida.
I'm not familiar with that, actually.
Well, it's where one man working by himself, built this huge building and ground surrounding it with massive stones that he allegedly moved with ropes and pulleys, which no human being could do that. Let's see if we can get back to some of these callers. Let's give Mike from Minnesota another chance. Are you there, Mike, from Minnesota? Okay, we'll pass on him, and now we got Mike from Illinois. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, guys. I got a quick question. Did NASA ever admit that there was a possibility of... I sometimes don't know what to name it. You know, the Death Star, Nemesis, you know what I'm talking about. But
oh, yes.
did they ever admit it? Was it the Iris or is there any top secret information? I'm sure you probably couldn't reveal, or even if it was top secret, because if it would be secret. But is there any evidence that they know that it exists?
I'll give you my answer, and then Lucas, you can jump right in there. The New York Times published an article 20 years ago in the early 80s talking about the 10th planet being found. And that information was done by the New York Times science editor. Now, Dr. Harrington was not part of NASA. He was, however, part of the federal government. And there aren't that many scientists at that level who... get paid to look at stars. NASA had theirs. Harrington, of course, was with the United States Naval Observatory. They all know each other. They go to conferences together. They're on a first name basis. Now, Harrington was not part of NASA on one hand. On the other, he was part of the federal government, and he did publicly state that Planet X was real and that he had found it. Lucas, go ahead and jump right in there.
All right. Well, it sounds like
we got a break coming up. We got a break. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back.
John Moore is as close as your telephone. Call him right now. 1-800-313-9443.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 31st of October. Lucas, you're about to jump right in there and give us what your input is about NASA talking publicly about the 10th planet, the destroyer.
Oh, yeah, they just admitted it on March 11th of this year, actually. Oh. An article that was written by NASA came out titled, Sun's Nemesis Pelted Earth with Comet, Study Suggests. And just Google NASA Nemesis, and you'll pull it up, and I'll just read a couple little excerpts from it. A dark object may be lurking near our solar system, occasionally kicking comets in our direction. Nicknamed Nemesis or the Death Star, the undetected object could be a red or brown dwarf star or even a darker presence several times the mass of Jupiter. And it says that our solar system is surrounded by a vast collection of icy bodies called the Oort cloud. If the sun were part of a binary system in which two gravitationally bound stars orbit a common center of mass, this interaction could disturb the Oort cloud on a periodic basis, sending comets whizzing towards us. So this was a NASA article that just came out in March of this year. And they talk about it. They just, you know, it's just that Fox doesn't jump on it and ram it down everybody's throat.
Right, right. Well, they certainly could take something like that and make it as big a story as they wanted to, couldn't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the asteroid impact down in Colombia was a huge story, and still my friends, my personal friends, are blown away that that happened, and they didn't see a peep about it on the mainstream news. I mean, well, you'd think the scientists would be running down there with all their instruments, you know, and, hey, we need to get to all the measurements to find out exactly what happened, but nothing.
Well, it's much more important who Paris Hilton is dating than silly things like that.
Yeah. Well, it's bread and circuses, you know. It's the bread and circuses.
I know. Well, it's professional sports and what's going on with the movie personality. That's much more important. Did we lose Mike from Illinois? Did he hang up?
No, Mike is here. One more question.
Go ahead.
Has global warming been debunked? Could we attribute possibly the approach planet or star X, whatever you want to call it?
The destroyer,
anyway, go ahead.
Planet X. Well, they chose the term global warming, 1979, Mike. They wanted to have a cover story. They knew 30 years in the future what would be happening, which of course is right now. Bizarre weather-related events, some of which would be warming, and they now regret picking that as the verbiage that they picked. They more correctly now are using the term climate change. In the meantime, they've thoroughly discredited themselves, having started out with and hanging their hat on the global warming mantra, and making themselves look like fools. It's all a cover story to conceal and keep people distracted from what's really going on. Now, many of these things we can attribute possibly to the destroyer planet or to the 10th planet. Many others, like earthquakes, for example, we've always had earthquakes. We're having a dramatic increase in earthquakes. Some may be related to the 10th planet, some may not be. It's very dangerous territory to get into when you start saying this is definitely part of the 10th planet in the absence of evidence. And I try not to do that. Lucas, go ahead and jump right in there.
Well, one thing I do notice, and everybody can notice this, is the brightness of the planets in the moon. Okay, anybody that's been around for more than, 15 years on this planet can just look outside any given night when the moon's out or you see Jupiter or Venus, and they are way brighter than they used to be. Because I've been looking up at the sky for a long time, and just over the last couple of years, they just keep getting brighter and brighter. And I'd have to say that's attributed most likely to this situation. And it might be something as, I think this is what causes the ice ages, basically that the object has such a gravitational pull that sometimes it puts us in between it and the sun, and it pulls us away from the sun. That's why the orbit changed from 360 to 365 days back during the Egyptian times. And then I have a feeling sometimes it comes up and puts the sun in between us and it, which then the gravitational pull of both of them together pull us back closer to the sun, which give us these warming periods that humanity has blossomed in the past. So, I think it explains. I think, there's barely anything that I see that happens now that's like, wow, that's related, There's so many things that are happening that seem very well related to the situation.
Right. Well, the evidence that I'm seeing, and I was just reading an article by Jonathan Gray this morning is that in ancient, and when I say ancient, 10,000-12,000 years ago, there were no polar ice caps. There was no part of the world that was not a very pleasant place to live 12,000 years ago. And of course, that's obviously all changed. Mike, did we answer your questions?
Yes, you did. What about the amateur astronomers? With their infrared equipment, if they even have any? I know the night goggles are pretty advanced now. Will they be able to see this possibly? And at what point? And that I'll take it off the air.
Okay. Well, what I'm hearing, Mike, is that amateur astronomers in the southern hemisphere, New Zealand, Australia, the extreme south end of South America, they'll be able to see the 10th planet sometime this coming spring. Lucas, what's your thoughts on that?
You know, I don't honestly know or any, you know, I've heard for a couple years now, I've heard several people, you know, put out videos, oh, this is the 10th planet, this is it. I have no idea when it's coming. I think it's within the next couple years, and I hope that we have a chance to see it before it just magically appears on the horizon.
Absolutely. Break coming up. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 31st of October. If you don't have a copy of Lucas's DVD, The Destroyer Star and the Future of Mankind, you don't have it for your private collection. You need it. I'm just telling you flat out, you need it. You can get it at his website, World Wide Web, rabbithole2.com, rabbithole2.com. It's a two-disc set, very professionally done, professionally packaged. I know people, you probably too, you get these DVDs in the mail, they're in a paper slipcase. That's not the case here. It's professionally packaged, very well done. The title of it is The Destroyer Star and the Future of Mankind, available at his website, rabbithole2.com. Lucas, where were we before the break?
Well, I was going to get into something that I thought was real interesting. I talked a lot about in the new presentation, Return of the Great Dragon, and that is basically what dragons are. All these years, you know, that we've talked about dragons, and they've been known as mythical creatures, but yet there is most likely a basis in the whole myth, and that is the fact that dragons most likely were nothing but shooting stars, comets, asteroids, things like that. The ancients, take for instance, you have an old goat farmer in the year 1100 sitting on his back watching the stars one night, and all of a sudden this thing crosses the sky and appears to land in the next village over. So he goes and tells the king, hey, I saw a fire-breathing dragon last night. So the king sends his knights out. You know, they go looking for this thing, and all they find is a big pit in the ground left by it. And so they suspected that dragons lived in caves in the ground.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, I thought that, all this time that, you know, the dragons have been kept without anybody kind of putting their finger on what they really were. You know, it even says in the Bible that that Satan is a dragon. He's the great dragon. He's the dragon of all dragons. And so, you know, it's real interesting to start getting into the myth of this, because there is a lot of fact in that in the ancient times. It's just been twisted and transferred.
Well, that's waste. We all find that out in the third grade when we tell one story and they repeat it from among a bunch of students, and what happens at the end of 20 students or 25 students repeating the same story.
You know, what I find is really interesting, the more that I look into it, I can pretty much show that they've been preparing for this for 100 years. I suspect that they've been preparing for it first, at least since the year 700, believe it or not. There's just evidence to show that they concocted the whole Earth is flat thing to scare people from finding the New World so they could send their minions over here, Christopher Columbus, who was involved with the Knights Templar, over to America to found this country. They actually found ancient Egyptian artifacts buried in Michigan, or Illinois. It's either, I think it's Michigan. Don't quote me. It's either Michigan or Illinois, one of the two. But yeah, and these predate Columbus discovering America. And there's also something called the Money Pit, which is up in Canada, which is basically a very sophisticated. Somebody had dug down hundreds of feet into the ground on this little island off of Canada, and it's got all these elaborate. Every so many feet is a wooden level, and it keeps going down. And even in today's world, they cannot get to the bottom of this thing because the way it was concocted, they dug these tunnels out to the ocean, so the ocean comes in and floods this thing and keeps people from getting in there. And that's where they suspect maybe some of these religious artifacts are hidden, like the Holy Grail and the Ark of the Covenant. Yeah. So look at the Money Pit. Real interesting stuff, and who constructed that. And so there's definitely something too. You know, the Vikings, they were imitating somebody with their horns, you know, and all these horned creatures in the petroglyphs,
right.
So there is there's something to it. Don't know exactly what, but I do know that there's something more to it than we're being, you know, told by the
Absolutely. Well, we got another call, a regular caller here, one of my research team, Sheldon. Go ahead, Sheldon.
Have you guys heard of Alternative 3?
No.
Well, it was a British TV documentary put out in June 1977 that dealt with the plan to build a transfer station on the backside of the moon and to build an underground base on Mars and remove a certain limited Noah's Ark cross-section of Earth's population, like artists, scientists, engineers, writers, etc., to go to Mars as a survival colony in the event of catastrophe on Earth. Now, Professor Jim McCanney just put a book out called The Diamond Principle that deals with us getting off the planet and colonizing outer space. Well, sure enough, I come across this article last night. Is NASA covering up the 100-year Starship? The director of NASA's Ames Research Center in California, Pete Warden, said that there's a new program funded by the super-secret government agency DARPA. In a talk at San Francisco's Long Conversation Conference, Mr. Warden said that DARPA has $1 million to spend plus another $100,000 from NASA for the program, which will send people on a one-way trip to Mars. And, you know, just ties in with what McCanney put out here on the Diamond Principle. You think
how much,
there's a prospect?
How much money they got to spend, Sheldon?
DARPA has $1 million and NASA $100,000.
That don't sound like very much.
No, not for those kinds of programs. That's a pittance.
It's just the fact that the director of NASA's Ames Research Center let this slip in a speech in California here within the last few days. You know, what do you think the prospect is that the elites may be actually getting off the planet? Because I've interviewed Jay Widener on my own show, and he says that this is what the elites are doing.
Well, in the absence of evidence, I don't, you know, I need evidence. I live in a world of evidence. I haven't seen any evidence yet.
Well, I know Professor McCanney is a close friend of yours, and he has a book out that talks about us trying to get off the planet and colonize space.
Right. Well, that's something that Jim would like to see and advocate, but it's advocating it and supporting it doesn't mean it's happened. That's two different
I'd agree with it. That'd be a smart thing to do. Try and get people out there in space.
Well, it just seems like some interesting dot connectors. I thought I'd just throw it in.
It is. Well, we appreciate the heads up there, Sheldon.
All right, guys, have a good one.
Okay, thank you.
You think about the old episodes of, remember the show Land of the Lost?
Nope, never caught
that. The dinosaurs, Marshall, Will, and Holly, they got lost in a lost world where there's dinosaurs and all that. Well, anyway, there are these creatures that are reptiles that are there, and one is named Enoch, which is a very, you know, symbolic name in itself. But anyway, he talks about how his people were advanced and civilized at one point in time, but then the great cataclysm happened and knocked them down to uncivilized levels. And so this show, Land of the Lost, came out in the 70s, I believe, maybe even the late 60s, but I think it was early 70s. And I used to watch as a kid. I'd run home from doing anything to go watch Land of the Lost.
Well, that reminds me, this past Thursday at lunch, I met a gentleman who, he's now retired, but he worked for one of the international oil exploration companies and traveled the world. One of his stops was in Kashmir, that disputed area between Pakistan and India. And I said, are you aware that one or more nuclear devices were set off there about 12,000 years ago. He says, oh, yeah, John, everybody in Kashmir is aware of it. They even sell little trinkets for the tourists commemorating the event.
Crazy. See, now, I don't know whether what to, they haven't determined whether it's nukes or whether it could also be impact events, too. You know, they found not only that Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed, but also five other surrounding cities were totally destroyed at that same exact time period.
Right. Well, he also, the same individual, he talks about the Sanskrit writings, which I've studied just a bit. And the Sanskrit, these ancient Indian manuscripts, give detailed accounts of heavier-than-air flight and atomic weapons and space flight and all these modern things that people thousands of years ago could not possibly have known about unless that they had some firsthand knowledge.
Yeah, the Sumerians, knowing that the color of the planets. I think that I honestly believe in my heart that humans went out to the outer planets thousands of years ago, and that we've been to the moon, and that's what I've heard. That now, I was only a baby when the moon landing happened, but what I heard from people, and I don't know if this is true or not, but that there were 11 minutes of the original live broadcast that were removed of them talking about that you heard it on the live broadcast, but were never ever recorded and released to the public about them talking about buildings and stuff on the moon as they were making their orbit around to land. And I think that we've been out there to those planets thousands of years ago.
Well, we were. I don't know if you and I have ever talked about the Black Knight satellite or not, Lucas.
Uh-uh.
Jonathan Gray, my first awareness of it was reading Jonathan Gray's book, Dead Men's Secrets. And on the first page of the book, he talks about his knowledge of the Black Knight satellite. I've now since independently confirmed it from a couple of private sources that I know and trust that the Black Knight satellite is real. It's estimated to be 12,000 years old. It's just below the Van Allen radiation belt, about 22,000 miles high. And I know, too, it's three dimensions, 40 by 70 feet. I don't know the third dimension, which could be 10 or 20 or more feet. And I know one of its other nicknames. Its other nickname is the chirogenic box, the chirogenic box, which, of course, is the science of absolute zero. The Black Knight satellite was discovered shortly after the Sputnik satellite went up and our first satellite went up in modern times in about 1959, 1960. They set up optical and radar tracking stations to track these new man-made objects. That's when they found the Black Knight satellite on a polar orbit, not on an equatorial orbit. And it's highly classified. Finding out very much about this is difficult, very difficult, but the knowledge I've got from my private sources is that most likely our government had the lift capability about 1969 with the Apollo missions to get that high up. Most likely, the Apollo space missions never got to the moon. That's the information I have. They didn't have, they probably still don't have, the shielding, enough lift capability to have enough shielding to keep people from being cooked when they go through the Van Allen radiation belt. That's the problem with spaceflight that I don't believe we've overcome yet in modern times.
Yeah, something about the past. You know, those people had some technologies, and people tend to think when they see, in their mind, when they see something carved in stone, their mind automatically starts thinking of people wearing loincloths and using other stones to carve in stone, and they're not putting two and two together that it's brilliant that they carved it in stone, because that's the only possible way to preserve it for future generations. There's no other way to preserve things.
Absolutely. Well, we've all heard about cave paintings. When you get in some of these caves in France and you go to the oldest part of the cave paintings, you find depictions of men and women wearing what appear to be modern clothing, women carrying purses and so forth, in cave paintings that are many thousands of years old.
Another thing that just blew me away was I was watching some show on cave diving, and these cave divers actually had they dove down into this cave through the all the river system that went up, and then they came up into a into an area of the cave that hadn't been exposed before. They found a skeleton of a bat laying on the ground. There's no possible way that bat could have gotten in that area of the cave unless at one point in time that cave was not flooded thousands of years ago. And it was just real interesting to, you know, all these little tidbits that come out in different things you see are remarkable.
Did you catch
the Batman? Did you ever catch that Bruce Wayne's great-grandfather founded Skull and Bones?
Oh, no.
Oh, man. On Batman, on episode 33, nonetheless, in the year 1966, right, Batman or Bruce Wayne's grandmother throws this house party where she invites all the villains over to the house, right, to have dinner. And while they're there, one of them sees a painting on the wall and says to her, "Is that Bruce Wayne's grandfather?" And she says, "No, that's his great-grandfather." And he goes, I heard he was marked for Skull and Bones." And she goes, "Marked for it? He founded Skull and Bones." And that was back in 1966, episode 33.
Was that a comic book we're talking about here?
No, that was a Batman show with
Batman show. Well,
yeah, you know, with the West.
1966. Yeah. Well, I was a senior in high school and pretty much consumed with football and other important things, I'm sure.
yeah.
Well, fascinating. That's absolutely fascinating. One of the more fascinating things we've been kind of dancing around here is the existence of high technology in ancient times.
Yeah,
and that's one of the what we call it hidden archaeology, forbidden archaeology. There's an archaeologist named Michael Cremo, C-R-E-M-O, Cremo, who's done a lot of excellent work. Jonathan Gray continues to do his work along the same lines, revealing to the public the existence in physical evidence of high technology existing on this planet many thousands of years ago, and the evidence is pretty extensive, isn't it, Lucas?
Well, yeah. If you got a brain in your head, all you got to do is look at the pyramid, the Great Pyramid. That itself, right? Just think about this: 2.2 million blocks. Okay, how can somebody? You cannot put that on paper. That's got to be blueprinted. Okay, that had to be done with some other kind of system. How much? You know, how are you going to blueprint out 2.2 billion blocks on paper? Okay, you can't do it. It's got to be done in some sort of computer system. So that in itself, and the time it took that they say to build it, they'd have to put a block in place every 93 seconds, I think it was. You know, it would be physically impossible.
Right. Well, we're finding out now that a lot of what we think is Egyptian history has been grossly misstated. But the pyramid I want to know more about is the one in China that you could put two or three great pyramids inside of. That's the one I want to find out about.
Well, not only that, but the Nile used to run east to west. So no wonder why they haven't found ancient civilizations along the current Nile Basin, because of the fact that it's only been there for a few thousand years. Now
exactly.
That they've found that the old basin of the Nile, they're going to find civilizations that existed there thousands and thousands of years ago.
Right, right. Yes, and of course there's the city between Okinawa and the main island of Japan, the under-ocean city of massive stone buildings. I've seen photographs. This thing made a splash in the media for a few days, three or four years ago. We haven't heard a peep about it since.
10,000 years old, yep.
Break coming up. Call the numbers, 800-313-9443. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore, Sunday the 31st. Lucas, my friend, we're just about out of time again. What's the title of your DVD and what's the website, please?
The Destroyer Star and the Future of Mankind, and you can get that at www.rabbithole2.com. That's rabbithole with the number 2 after .com.
All right, and that's a two DVD set. One of the things that fascinates me about it is the timeline you present. This is well known among archaeologists, where these civilizations all thrive and are getting better, and then all of a sudden they just collapse all at the same time.
Yeah, all across the world, all the way from South America through Europe and Asia, all the way through, you know, pretty much everywhere across the world, it all just collapsed.
Yeah,
there's also,
you know,
600 flood myths, over 600 from different cultures, and really the only one that talks about rain is the one that's promoted in the current, you know, the Noah theory. You know, all the others talk about the ocean rising up.
Right. Well, that's going to happen. And according to the U.S. Navy, men that I have debriefed in their classified briefings, these men were all warned, gentlemen, this will happen in your lifetimes, not your children's, not your grandchildren's. These oceans are going to come out of their basins in your lifetime, and you better be moving to the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks if you want to survive it.
Yeah, I know.
That's what's coming.
It's what's coming, and it's crazy, and it's really crazy to think about. But and that's why over the years, I suspect that the powers that be have helped promote different end of the world things, knowing that they would fall apart because it desensitizes the public to it.
Absolutely, and when the real event comes, it'll be just another story, and people won't pay attention.
Exactly.
That's right. Well, I don't want the music to cut us off here, Lucas. I appreciate your time, sir. Good luck with that restoration of that van. And we'll be talking soon.
Well, I thank you, and you have a great day, and thanks, everybody,
thanks
for listening.
All right, okay.
Bye-bye.
And that was Lucas. Ladies and gentlemen, these things are real. I have debriefed about 24 Navy veterans. Get my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. You want the details? That's where they are. Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, at my website, thelibertyman.com. Thelibertyman.com. I'll be on tomorrow morning on the Micro Effect at 0700 Central, as always. This coming Friday, I co-host Dr. Deagle's third hour on Genesis. It's 4 to 5 Central with my friend Ann Morrison. And Blog Talk Radio, we're working on getting a new show set up on Blog Talk Radio. I'm not sure the exact time slot, and I'll keep you posted on that when we find it out. These things are real. They're now. They're a clear and present danger right now. Not for the lives of your children or grandchildren in the future. These are clear and present danger right now in your lifetime. Educate yourself. Figure this stuff out for yourself so you can make informed decisions and take what action is necessary to protect the people you care about most. In my opinion, that's what you would be well advised to be doing. Failure to pay heed, well, the consequences could be very dramatic and very deadly. Failure to pay heed might be an absolute disaster. Probably will be an absolute disaster. Do what you can. Do what you can now to save what you can. That's what one of the characters says in that film, The Day After Tomorrow. Save the ones that you can. That's it for today. You all be safe out there. Buy lots of ammunition. And God bless America.